BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hi, this is Jane Garvey. Thank you for downloading the Woman's Hour podcast, Monday the 11th of February 2019. On the podcast today, what it's like to grow up as the child of an alcoholic. Nelson Mandela's right-hand woman for many years, Zelda Lagrange, talks to Woman's Hour. And Threads of Life, a history of the world through the eye of a needle. The author of that book, Claire Hunter, is on Woman's Hour today. But we start with a conversation about guidelines on what constitutes obscene pornography. They have been relaxed in England and Wales. This is an explicit conversation which does reference various sexual acts. So if it's not something you're interested in or you don't want to hear it, then you can shuffle on a bit further into the podcast, maybe give it 10 minutes, 11 minutes, something like that. And we'll be in the sort of territory you're more at ease with a little bit later on in the pod. But to continue, pornography which showed female ejaculation, consensual bondage and sadomasochism was until recently classed as obscene, and it could have led, in theory at least, to a prosecution. But now the Crown Prosecution Service guidelines have changed. They're going to use tests, they say, to determine whether an image or a video can be legally classed as obscene. Now, some people say this is very much a victory for queer, feminist and fetish porn. Others have real misgivings. I talked this morning to Rosa Friedman, Professor of Law, Conflict and Global Development at Reading University. And first you'll hear the voice of Pandora Blake, a performer and a porn maker. And I asked Pandora why they were so happy about the relaxation of the guidelines.
For me, I think the most important thing about these changes is that it officially recognises and enshrines our right to consent to the kind of sex that we have and to make creative expressions of that kind of sex legally in the UK. I mean, I do enjoy BDSM in my private life, and there has previously been a gap between what it was legal to do and what it was legal to show on camera, which means that if you're growing up with a minority sexuality, particularly if you're queer or if you're kinky, you might not have been able to find anything that was legal that depicted the kind of things that you're interested in.
Let's just briefly, BDSM means?
So it stands for kind of bondage, discipline, sadomasochism.
None of the acts that we're discussing today have ever been illegal. Is that correct? The acts I'm talking about here, not the distribution of images of these acts, but the acts themselves.
It's not illegal to tie someone up or to be tied up or to be gagged for sex. There is a cut-off where it would classify as assault. So the law around actual bodily harm is that your consent doesn't mitigate the fact that it's assault.
So and nobody can ever consent to actual bodily harm.
In the law, that is still the case. Although people who do consent to receive that kind of thing would disagree with you. But these guidelines cut off at the same point. So they're now levelling the playing field between what's legal to do on film and what's legal to do in private. And things, for example, playing with urine, female ejaculation, as you mentioned, and kind of queer non-phallic sex acts like inserting the whole hand or a woman sitting on someone's face, previously completely legal to do, but illegal to publish depictions of them. And so we're now seeing a culture where it's much easier to see these kind of female-centric acts of pleasure, orgasm and dominance than it was before.
And this is a feminist triumph of sorts?
I think so. I think that consent is a critical issue in our times, and in order to combat rape culture, which is absolutely critical, and to combat rape and abuse, we need as a culture to start recognising consent when we see it, to consider the consent of individuals to be valid. And if we're criminalising pornography that's consensually produced when it was legal to do, then we're kind of saying that the consent of those performers doesn't matter, and I think that sends a really harmful message.
Just to go back to something you said earlier, how important is it actually in somebody's life to see their own sex life portrayed in these arenas?
I think diversity of representation is absolutely crucial. You know, we need people of all ages, all sizes, all ethnicities in our mainstream media. And in the same way, we need all kinds of sex, particularly any sex that offers an alternative to the kind of heteronormative mainstream represented in our erotic cinema. You know, if you're growing up queer, if you fantasize about being spanked, which I did from a young age, you might think that you're the only one on the planet. You might not think that you ever deserve love. You might think there's something deeply wrong with you. And it wasn't until I started, actually, it was erotic literature in my case, because I was kind of a little bit too young for free porn on the internet. But people nowadays are able to find a community that actually there's nothing they need to be ashamed of, as long as it's consensual. And that's the most important thing, because I think that the way that this change recognises consent and actually puts a pressure on producers to make consent explicit in the material, because that's one of the tests that you mentioned. If the consent isn't very transparent to the viewer, then they might still find it obscene. I think that sets a really great precedent.
Just really briefly before we get to Rosa, who obviously thinks very differently, consent is absolutely at the heart of this. It's completely vital. It's a subject we refer to often on this programme, and rightly, particularly now. I'm a bit baffled by these tests. Who's going to do the tests?
Well, in the immediate term, given this is the Crown Prosecution Service's guidance to police, it's going to be the police making a judgment about whether what they're watching is consensual and makes that very clear. But these guidelines also inform what the British Board of Film Classification will classify for legal distribution on DVD and in cinemas. So they are also going to be doing their own assessments.
Rosa, I want you to give us your perspective on this.
Look, I think There will always be some people involved in the pornography industry, and indeed in all of the sex industry, who have the agency and the capacity to consent to these types of acts, or even to consent to be there at all. But we know that the vast majority of people involved in the sex industry globally, and in the pornography industry globally, are not consenting or don't have the freedom and choice to consent in the way that you do, Pandora, or in the way that we would hope that in an emancipated society, all women and all men would be able to do. And clearly men are also, you know, involved in the pornography industry. I think from a feminist perspective, or from my feminist perspective, this idea that we can consent to harms being done, whether they're transient harms or not, feeds into a society where violence against women is eroticised, and where men, and there are many hundreds of thousands of abusive men, will be able to leap onto this and say, well, in our own home, my wife or my partner consented to this type of violence being done. And they will be able to point to the relaxation of the laws around pornography and be able to use that. So this isn't around sort of the emancipation or liberation of some individuals. This is actually feeding into a society where violence against women is just accepted, and where people fantasise about violence against women and then go and perpetrate it.
And they will use this relaxation as evidence that they're absolutely fine to do exactly that.
I think what we've been seeing over the last 20 years or so is defences like rough sex defence, when women are, you know, harmed, sometimes killed during sex acts. We've seen a mass rise in pornography being distributed. And even though the laws say very clearly that these can't be shown to children under the age of 18, we know that children, teenagers, access pornography. We know that young men are becoming very desensitised in terms of sexual pleasure, and that there is an increase in accessing violent porn and violent acts on the internet, which does then harm them.
Yeah, it was interesting listening to you, Pandora, and you spoke very passionately when you made your case. You implied that this was porn produced by women for women. Obviously, a lot of lesbian porn is exactly that. But it doesn't mean that you're not entertaining what we call the male gaze. Is that fair enough?
Well, actually, I think that what's been made more possible by this change is exactly the kind of pornography that counters the male gaze. You know, a lot of the acts that we're talking about are things that are done between gay men, between lesbians, between queer folk. And, you know, you're talking about violence against women, which obviously is a massive issue. Actually, a lot of fetish porn, about half of fetish porn, is men being submissive and women being dominant. I don't quite see how that fits into your model.
Well, look, go on, Rosa. How does it?
Well, I think within certain kink communities and within certain fetish communities, that might be true. But we know that the vast majority of pornography out there is women. Whether it's violence against women, whether it's films that are made for the male gaze and for male fantasies. And so I think that relaxing the laws for a very small group of people and not recognising the damage that can be done then for a very large number of people is a little bit disingenuous.
I actually think that these changes are going to hold exactly what you're talking about to account. You know, what I think you're talking about is the kind of mainstream porn where a woman might be choked or slapped without any prior negotiation. It's not done in the context of a negotiated BDSM scene with a safe word and aftercare, where it's kind of signaled that this is consensual.
Do you think the average consumer of a lot of this porn is able to make that sort of distinction?
Well, that's why this change is important, because now that's only going to be legal if the consent of the performers is very clearly signalled, which is going to actually, you know, BDSM producers are already doing this, but the mainstream studios might not have been, and now they're going to have to, which is absolutely fantastic.
And I think this comes back to the idea of consent. What can we consent to and what can't we consent to? Because the law regulates society. So you can consent to being beaten up in a boxing ring, but you can't consent to being beaten up outside of a boxing ring. Do people have the freedom and capacity to consent to things like waterboarding? We saw in America recently that waterboarding is now being said, waterboarding, which is a form of torture, is now being allowed on porn sites. We know that there is a prohibition against torture across the world in all situations, and yet we're allowing torture for male sexual gratification. Sometimes female sexual gratification, but predominantly male sexual gratification.
I think it's about half and half, actually. There was a French study in 2015.
How do you know that?
Well, there was a French study in 2015, Joyenne et al., which found that between 46 and 65% of people had fantasised about domination or submission in a sexual context. And that's men and women fantasising, like men fantasising about being dominated and about dominating, and women fantasising about both too. So it's actually about half the population that find this kind of thing sexy in the privacy of their own imaginations.
This change has happened. There's a degree to which a lot of people listening now will not know anything about this. One of the reasons we are having this conversation, I don't actually think this conversation would take place anywhere else on the radio, by the way, and I'm rather proud of that. Are you concerned, though, Rosa, by the very fact that actually most people didn't know about this, but it may well have an impact on their life or their life of their children or partners?
I think that very often what happens with campaigns, and I have a lot of respect for activists and campaigners on any issue, is that the people involved are a very small community. They are able to lobby and place pressure on, and the broader public don't know about the campaigns, not just on this issue, on many issues. I think bringing these issues to light and having frank discussions is the only way that society and law can go hand in hand, and that we can work together to make sure that the regulations are in place in a way that protects women, protects children, but also that allows for sort of the neoliberal model that we live in and allows empowerment of women. But I think having these changes without having had a very public discussion means that we're now going to have to play catch up.
Well, there was a public consultation in September, which only 300 people responded
to. Well, there we are. How public was this?
Well, I'm trying to raise the profile of the conversation about consent. You know, I'm running consent workshops, for example, for adults and liaising with sex educators. I actually just want to come back to something
really briefly,
you said
Pandora.
Earlier, that the majority of people in the porn and sex industries were not consenting. That is not, in point of fact, correct. I think the current stats on trafficking in the sex industry globally is around 8%, which is equivalent to kind of farming and agricultural and domestic labour.
A lot of people and some hideous experiences.
But we aren't looking at criminalising all paid housework or all farming or all agriculture or all factory work or all construction work.
I'm not sure they're directly comparable, but I'll take the point.
The
Thank you very much.
The majority of people making porn are DIY performers. The commercial porn industry isn't big enough to fund full-time jobs. So most of us are sex workers at home producing our own clips.
Pandora, thank you very much. Really a powerful debate and a very interesting one from Pandora and Rosa. Your thoughts welcome, of course, at BBC Woman's Hour on